Time now for the College Basketball Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
One of the greatest heel moves of all time, Carolina wins. Tar Heels and wrestling heels.
With SI's Pat Forty.
That's the hot trending topic in college basketball. Who can and can't get along in the handshake line?
Here's Pat and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. March Madness. Pat, you are globetrotting it. You're at the Duke-Carolina game, which we have to get to.
Oh, we'll get to it. You bet.
Including the handshake kerfuffle. Handshakes are big. Yes. Big this year.
That's the hot trending topic in college basketball. Who can and can't get along in the handshake line?
Who knows how to shake a hand, right? Your dad teaches you how to shake a hand like
that's
a man.
Right.
You're supposed to shake the damn hand. Or
that's
not.
Right.
God, there's a bunch of snowflakes in college basketball. And now you're in Vegas for what is absolutely like the college, almost a college basketball dream.
Yeah.
Right. Like a week in Vegas and you're watching West Coast Conference, Pac-12 and Mountain West all in one city.
All in one city.
Remember when the NCAA hated Vegas?
Oh, yeah. 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 Eventually they'll have a Final Four here. Book it. Literally and figuratively book it.
You might as well stay a week because the opening weekend of the big tournament in Vegas is one of the best weekends. I did it once and it was.
Did you do it?
Yeah. Ooh, it was so good.
See, this week will be great too because there's more tournaments. There's more teams.
More games.
Yeah. You know?
A lot of ways, this is the best week. If you're a diehard that just really likes college basketball, this is the best week because there's just so many games.
Yeah.
All day, every day. And you get the fun of like, you know, I did a number of years. I'd go to the Metro Atlantic or the MAC title. Like, I'd try to do a little of both. Like, the excitement of those. Saw them yesterday or Sunday with the Valley and, I don't know, whatever league Longwood is in.
Yeah, Big South.
Big South, Big South. Mm-hmm. But then you also, it's just great. But, obviously, only some of those games are, like, do or die.
Right.
So,
right.
But it is a great teaser. You can just overdose on college hoops this weekend.
Yeah,
last four in. We can finally do last four in. You know, I have a great hatred of last four in.
Yes,
because they start in December,
March. It makes sense.
It makes sense now. Although everything can change.
Yeah,
but I hate last four in. It's just this terrible gimmick. ESPN, I think this year toned it down. Maybe they listened to me.
I don't know.
There was way too much last four in like mid-January.
Yeah.
You're like, well, yeah, but if they go on a 5-game win streak, they're now no longer last four out.
We're combining Wetzel pet peeves here right now, right here, right now. We got last four in, really? First four out, all that business. I am podcasting from my bed in a boutique hotel in Las Vegas because they don't have a desk.
Pat. Whatever happens in Vegas stays. I don't want to know what's going on in your bed in Las Vegas. Okay.
It's a pretty benign story. It's just me and my podcast equipment here.
Okay. All right. So, as long as it's G-rated. My God, you just got there like 20 minutes ago.
I know.
You have no desk in your room?
No desk in the room. No
is
desk.
It a Marriott?
It's a Marriott. It's a boutique Marriott thing, though.
Mistake.
So. If you're coming out here, look, the English Hotel looks actually very nice in a lot of ways, but if you actually want to do any work, which I need to do a lot of this week, no. You got a nice, like, orange suede chair and some sort of animal fur blanket, but no desk.
You do not want to know what happens on a suede chair
with an animal blanket.
Animal fur blanket in Las Vegas. No. No. You'd much rather have a desk. Long time, I don't know what, followers of mine? I don't know. Back in 2015, I waged a war against Marriott. It was me versus Marriott. I showed up at an ACC football championship game in Charlotte, checked into the City Center Marriott in Charlotte, and there was no desk to work with. There was no desk, and I called down. They said they were removing the desks. From all Marriott's because millennials didn't like working at desks and it was better to hang out in your room with more chairs. I have no one to hang out with. Right? The people who stay at City Center Marriott's are a bunch of guys that look just like me. They slum around traveling work. They got you know, they're salesmen. They're, you know, this is not the cool place.
No,
they took him out of the airport Marriott at Newark. Like, that what hip millennial is hanging out at the airport Marriott in Newark? Two types of people stay at that hotel: business travelers and people got lost in that maze of roads around that airport. It's a disaster. And just ran out of gas and had to stay at the airport Marriott at Newark. No one goes, hey, we're all cool 26-year-olds. Let's go hang out at the airport Marriott. Nobody. So I waged a war, a PRK offensive against them, and won.
You did win.
I beat Marriott. they put the desk back in.
That's like the Ukraine beating Russia, man. Up against big odds. But
the Associated Press ran a story about Marriott putting the desk in, and in the third graph was a quote from me. I was the lead quote. Single greatest accomplishment of my life.
It really is. I can't think of anything else you've done noteworthy. That's
not much. But I did that one. I beat Marriott at the desk game.
General Wetzel of the Marriott resistance.
I even used Vegas as an example because I used to stay for fights sometimes at the Marriott Vacation Club on the Strip, which literally is probably the one hotel you could go, listen, this is not a business hotel. They right. still had a little table or desk, something.
Yeah.
And now you're telling me that I may have to take up this fight again. We must be vigilant against backtracking Marriott. We must hold them accountable to their promises of 2015.
We have a new
wedding in Vegas,
a new front in the campaign. Absolutely.
You need a desk.
I do.
Everybody needs a desk. If you don't need the desk, fine. What's the extra space for?
I don't know. I mean, like, there's only so much room I need for my animal fur blanket, you know.
I do not touch that thing.
This is very problematic looking around here. I don't know what I've gotten myself into. All because I plugged in a couple of rate codes and this one came up good.
Getting what you paid for. Yeah. Plenty of good Marriott's just off the Strip with the little tram that runs right into take you to T-Mobile, take you to MGM.
Very bad planning on my part.
Bad job by Pat, but that's all right. You have a week in Vegas on the company dime. So
we
ain't feeling too bad for you. All right, let's get to the exciting Carolina Duke game.
Oh yeah,
incredible fanfare. I thought the beginning of the game was good, having all the players there. Coach K comes out, he does all that, then he goes back in, and they kind of get that out of the way. They play the game. One of the greatest heel moves of all time. Carolina wins. Tar Heels and wrestling heels.
Yes,
I think it's the best win in the history of the rivalry for North Carolina. Some people were pointing to some 1974 game where they scored a bunch of points and came back. I'm sorry, I did not watch that one. But if we're debating things from four, I respect that. That maybe was the best victory of Carolina over Duke. But to ruin Coach K night is just phenomenal. And the Duke players just looked so tight at the end of the game. North Carolina did not. They played a great game. Their starters got it done, and they won it. So your thoughts on the scene there, Pat? What do you take from it?
Yeah, I mean, boy, certainly one of the most memorable, really maybe the most memorable regular season college game I've ever covered. Just from the time I got there Thursday, because Kay always talks on the Thursday before the Carolina game. Can't do it on Friday, does it on Thursday, fine. So you get there early. And he was really good, you know, there at the press conference. He was not Nick Saban about it. And in the end, maybe he should have been Nick Saban, where Saban, if this were Saban in his last Iron Bowl, he would just be glaring daggers at anybody who tried to ask him questions about it being the end for him. He'd be like, you know, screw that. I just want to talk about beating Auburn. Kay didn't do that, to his credit from a media standpoint, but maybe to his detriment, is that I think this thing was so big and hyped and grandiose and ambitious and really cool that I think it got to everybody. I think it got to him, and I think it got to his players for sure. You know, that you walked around campus. First of all, campus was emptying out of most of the students because it was going to be spring break. But a bunch of them stayed because they got tickets for the game. And so there were them. And then I've just never seen so many visitors on campus about anywhere, you know, other than a football Saturday. And this was not a football Saturday. So I just think there were a ton of people that either had tickets or just wanted to be around, you know, like some of those big SEC football games where you get 120,000 people in town and 100,000 in the stadium. So that was going on. And then, you know, I mean, ESPN has an absolute army covering campus, and you just got the feeling like this is a huge festival sort of event, and it kind of overtook the game. And one of the things Thursday, all the questions for Kay, there wasn't one question about North Carolina. Nothing. It's like they were a complete afterthought to this whole thing. And I'm sure North Carolina felt that. And I think Duke felt that. And it worked different ways for both sides. You get there Saturday. I mean, the Krzyzewskiville scene was incredible. The, you know, the College Game Day stuff was fantastic. And then you walk in and you see all those players. And look, nobody's had more great players in the last 40 years than Duke and Mike Krzyzewski. So maybe some other people have had more pros. Yeah, maybe they've had more pros, but
Carolina and Kentucky can go toe-to-toe with those two.
Yeah, I mean,
close.
Carolina had Michael Jordan, so that's a trump card.
It's like three or four Battiers.
Yeah, exactly. If you're coming up with a weighting scale, Michael Jordan is...
Four and a half Dunleavy's.
About 12 and a half Dunleavy's.
Okay, yeah.
But anyway, and then you see them all lined up there, and it's like, wow, okay, that's five national championships and 12 Final Fours worth of dudes. And I will say Cherokee Parks was hilarious, tattooed like head to toe and having the greatest time of his life. He's like looking around, waving, taking video of everybody. It's like he was just having a big old time, kind of a hippie flower child from the 90s teams. But so anyway, we get through that and it is incredibly loud in there. Incredibly loud early on. My right ear is still ringing from being there 2 days ago. And kudos to Carolina for A, coming out at them. And again, I don't think Duke was fully ready, but then staying with it. They got down, they come back. They get down the second half, they come back. And Duke just, I think that they expended too much emotional energy early on just with everything going on and didn't have much left at the end. I know that 74 game or whatever they were talking about where they scored, I think it was like 9 points in 17 seconds and there wasn't even a three-point line. Pretty incredible, but no. This, you beat Mike Krzyzewski, the winningest coach in history and the biggest thorn in the side of Carolina ever, that way on that day, that's it. That's got to be the most satisfying win Carolina's ever had in this rivalry. And probably outside of the NCAA tournament, the most satisfying win, one of the most satisfying wins they've ever had, period.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, they've never met in the NCAAs. They haven't met in the ACC tournament. But I mean, this is just, and you ruin the party a little bit. You know they're going to have this big old thing. They get, and all the players there, all these Duke alums spending $80,000 on tickets or whatever they really spent, probably $5,000, I don't know. How much did Seinfeld? Why was Seinfeld there? Do you know why Seinfeld was there?
I have no idea.
So Seinfeld was there.
Yeah.
It was a great scene. It was a fun game. And yeah, there was this whole bit like, oh, Carolina, because Carolina looked like they're about to get blown out at the end of the
season. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Then they rallied. And then I just think Duke got tense. And then it was like, oh, Carolina's making the game. This is good. And then it's like, Carolina, they could do this. And then it's like, you know, oh, no. Like, this is going to be horrible. And Krzyzewski was so angry in the post game, trying to fake it.
Yeah.
It was all family, this whole family speech. And, you know, it was, I could tell that was not how he wanted that to go. He didn't really have a whole lot. He had some prepared remarks, kind of, but.
When he came out, and the first thing he said is, I'm sorry about what happened this afternoon.
That was good. Yeah. That was good.
Yeah. I was like, you have been made, you know, the center of the biggest party Duke's ever thrown, and the whole thing just gets obliterated, you know, by a team that was an 11.5-point underdog that is not a very good North Carolina team, period. So, and that was when Krzyzewski came back out and they brought the players back out and the players all sat up where North Carolina had sat on the bench, the looks on their faces, it was like 12 guys that had just wrecked their parents' car. And I was like, oh, we are in so much trouble. We're the worst.
Tomorrow morning is going to be miserable. Like, we were hoping Kay would have a little too much red wine tonight. Practice got delayed to like 2. Nope. Yeah.
No.
7 a.m. Sprints. Yeah.
We suck worse than anybody has ever sucked. Oh, my God. This is going to be terrible. Yeah.
Yeah. That was rough. Okay. So part of the deal was a post-game handshake that did not occur between Chris Carrawell, Carolina head coach Hubert Davis. And then it looked like Nolan Smith kind of did this handshake, but look away.
Yeah.
Davis looked stunned at the non-handshake. So the Raleigh News and Observer reported that Chris Carrawell was not happy that Davis did not shake their hands before the game. And then there seemed to be some other reports about there was a disappointment or an anger or an offense by Duke that Duke played its final games in Chapel Hill earlier this year. Carolina barely made any recognition of Coach K's retirement, and there was certainly no gift or little pregame ceremony.
Hmm.
Whether that's true or not, I don't know. Whether Duke was really upset about that. Pat, what is first off, you have to shake pregame and postgame. I think Hubert Davis had to walk into this. Like, it wasn't a normal game. He didn't know what to do. Yeah, right. There's too many people there and all that. So I don't blame him for that. But do you have to give recognition to your arch rival? Should Carolina have given a rocking chair or done one of these things or thank you, Coach K, when he visited Chapel Hill? What is the etiquette here on this, Pat?
Carolina can do whatever the hell it wants with Coach K when he comes to their gym. And if they don't want to do anything, that's fine. If Duke wants to take offense at that. Now, this is the one thing about Duke and Carolina, which I just laugh at, is they both are very sensitive on matters of class and who has more class and decorum, because they not only want to be good, but they want to be the classiest, which, of course, ignores academic fraud and Zion Williamson and a lot of other things. But still. You know, they get so wound up and worked up about exactly these kind of things. It is truly hilarious. Now, I do like Chris Carwell, grow up, shake his hand. Don't be an imbecile. You know, it is not hard to walk by, shake it. You don't if you don't want to, you know, smile at him or whatever, you don't have to. But do the deal. Walk through the line. Shake the hand. Move on. And then, yeah, Nolan Smith with his best look away since he was passing as the point guard at Duke there. Oh, that's just silly. That's, you know, but as we know, Coach K has often been the self-appointed arbiter of decorum and class in college basketball. He's not afraid to lecture people if he doesn't think they're doing things right. But on this instance, I don't think his assistants were doing things right. And if I were Hubert Davis, I mean, I would laugh it off because I got the W, and that mattered most. But still, it's like, what the hell are you guys doing?
Yeah, I mean, this nonstop handshake, how to handshake, should we handshake? We need an NCAA subcommittee on this to rule. Like,
they'll come up with one by 2036.
Oh, my head. College basketball coaches, come get over yourself.
Yeah.
Just shake the hand, please. Just
exactly.
Not that hard. Is one Hubert Davis should just laugh. The fact he got under their skin, I love it.
Yeah,
love it. And that was a huge win for Hubert Davis.
Absolutely,
that could propel Hubert Davis. Because look at this season, okay, but this is, you get the Carolina job.
Yeah,
a lot of pressure.
Yep,
much is given, much is expected. They were not that great. They haven't been that great. This was the you got your signature win. I'm guessing that'll be, I don't know what the TV ratings were, but the highest rated game. Everyone's talking about it. Huge. You can recruit off of this.
Absolutely.
Huge game for Hubert Davis's career.
Yeah.
Massive. And you got it. And now you got Carwell upset and K's gone. And we're going to see what John Shire's got. They're bringing in, you know, they got a great recruiting class, but you know, that's only going to last if you're winning.
Yep.
So there's a lot of heat on all that. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. No, I mean, Hubert needed that win. It's not like he was going to get fired or anything, but people had been very underwhelmed by his first season. They had a pretty good amount of talent back, and they really weren't very good. They were on the bubble going into that game. They're in now. You win in Cameron against a team that could be a number one seed or number two seed, you're in. But they were dicey. They got blown out by Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh sucks. They got blown out by Wake Forest. They got blown out by Miami. They got blown out by Kentucky. They just hadn't done much, and now they did something epic, you know. And so Hubert, that was his arrival as a guy. Now Carolina fans are guaranteed looking at him differently than they did before Saturday at 6 o'clock.
Huge win in the programs, the two programs, which will always be measured against each other. No doubt. And next year's first two games between Shire and Davis will be similarly like very, very important on where you're going. You can't be the best in the country till you're best in your backyard. And that's the beauty of this thing. And one of the beauties of like old school conference when they set up conferences, like it's sad. Now they would never have these games. The two teams probably wouldn't even play. It'd be three different leagues for NC State, North Carolina, and Duke.
Yeah,
and right. they'd have to be like an act of Congress in North Carolina to get them all to play some, right? Yeah. That's why modern college athletics, like one of the greatest things in college athletics, is the triangle and Tobacco Road, the whole thing. And it's like the modern guy would be like, yeah, we can't do that.
Yeah, right. No, right. Exactly. Yeah,
we don't want any of the good stuff. We'd rather have Marquette in our league. That would fit better. We'd get that. You know, this is it's going to be great. As for Carolina. Hell no, you don't have to honor the other coach.
No, it's not your job.
They made some announcement. I would have mispronounced his name and said a local man who's worked 42 years at a job is retiring at the end. We wish him well in retirement. Something like that.
Yeah.
Some trolling little joke like that. Kind of funny. He's your arch rival.
Yeah. No, that's to kiss the ring. That's part of what that rivalry's always been about, is not kissing the other guy's ring. You know,
the K stuff has been a lot of fun at times, and it's a lot at times.
Yes, that's a good way to put it.
And it's like, you know, I mean, it was a post game ceremony, and it really was for Duke people. They televise it nationally, so it's not for me.
Right.
But, you know, there was a point where you're just like, you know, and our grandkids sacrificed not having grandpa around. Like, what? I would have traded one less visit for my grandpa if he made $100 million.
Yeah, how about Final Four tickets, Grandpa? Yeah.
I mean, I like my grandparents fine when they were alive, but I think the grandkids are pretty glad that Coach K kept working. Dude's they're gonna inherit so much money.
Yeah.
It's about family sacrifice. It's like a 6-year old in the thing. I'm like, I think that the 6-year old's doing all right.
The oldest one got into Duke and is a bench warmer on the team.
Right. Would you think you're gonna be a walk on at Duke if you're not? Come on. It got a little thick there. I'm trying to be nice. Okay. And I get it. It's family. The guy's 75, man. I mean, he's still working.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I like Coach K, but yeah, there was a moment or two where I was like, it was
a bit indulgent. I will say, I got to say this too, though. Like after the ceremony and he did the press conference, he was great in the press conference after that. He really, as he tends to be, he's smart and articulate and he was willing to talk about things. But even like before that, after he's just, you know, had this brutal loss, he walked in and like Jeff Goodman and I were over getting a Diet Coke and he kind of walks up behind us and goes, you guys know where I'm supposed to go? Like laughed, you know, I mean, like, well, you kind of built this place, so we figure you know where you're going. But it's like, that was even more like humor than I expected out of him in that situation. I think he was relieved to get it over. He said he was relieved to get it over because that had kind of taken on a life of its own. And now he can get on to try to win 9 basketball games.
It's going to be fun. All right. So one of the deals, I don't know if Duke can be a number one seed anymore. Think they can be a one seed?
I don't know. That was a damaging loss from that standpoint. I think they're probably out of the mix for a number one.
Okay. Not so a whole lot of ground to be able to make up in the ACC tournament.
Right. Either. That's the thing. They're just not going to play they're not going to play teams that really help them.
Or Auburn and Kentucky might play each other in the SEC, and that's going to be better than anything in the ACC.
The top four in the ACC, in the SEC, will all be playing good teams. You know, I mean, if the top teams all get to the semifinals, that's going to be good. Same Big 12. Be very good. Big 10 be good, but all the Big 10 teams have beaten each other up too much. They're not going to get a number one seed. But
Nebraska's going to win that tournament.
I'm telling you, man. I was joking about that on Twitter after they beat Ohio State for their second, the only time they've won 2 in a row in like 3 years. And now, hey, they've won 3 in a row all on the road and beat the team that was going to win the Big 10 by itself. They're the best 10-21 team we've ever seen, Dan Wetzel.
Well, they may be. They may be. Didn't they try to figure out whether they're the best 3-9 like football team last year?
Yes.
They lost all their games really close. So they might be the best. So Nebraska's got that going for them.
Nebraska has two things going for it. They lose. They're an impressive losing team, and they like to keep their losing coaches because they've already said they're keeping Hoiberg as well, along with Scott Frost. Yeah. As
we know. Hoiberg in that spot is it. All right. Potential number one seeds, Gonzaga, Baylor, Arizona. Kansas, maybe Auburn or Kentucky. Duke was a possible, but I think they're out. It was a big non-story that they had requested to play. If they were a one seed, they requested to go to Chicago, not the closest geographical region, which would have been, I think, Philadelphia.
yeah,
or something, or New Orleans, and people flipped out, but it was really nothing.
It was nothing.
Everybody gets to pick where they want to go. Does it matter?
They canvassed everybody and said, if you are the overall number one seed, where would you like to go?
Yeah, so they do it every year. Yeah, they do it every year. So, like, Gonzaga is going to choose San Francisco, right? Or, you know, if
Baylor would choose San Antonio.
Absolutely.
Baylor will choose. There you go. Baylor will choose San Antonio for sure. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to do that every year. So they canvass, you know, 10, 15 schools or whatever. Does it even matter who's won? We, you know, I make fun of the last four in, last four out. Obviously, that does matter at the end. You're in or you're out. Does it even matter who's a one seed? Or, I mean, it's a nice accomplishment for a program, but.
Right. I think it only matters in two ways. One is that, you know, geographic proximity, you get first dibs. And, you know, if you look out west, specifically Gonzaga, Arizona, maybe the top two teams overall, one of them's going to get the one seed out west and the other one might get shipped and might get shipped all the way across the country. Who knows? So you want to play in San Francisco where you can get more of your fans there and you're on your natural time zone? Or do you want to be, you know, gone to Philadelphia or Chicago or something? So that's where it factors in there. And the other thing is of just the sheer mathematics of the unlikelihood of a number one seed losing in the first round. Only Virginia.
Yeah. I mean, I think it matters if you're Baylor and you can play in San Antonio. Gonzaga to San Francisco, I mean, it's closer. I mean, you're going to play your first two rounds in Portland. Arizona's going to go to San Diego, which isn't too bad.
Yep.
I mean, I think if you're Baylor and you're like, I'll take Fort Worth and San Antonio, that means a lot, especially for a school that recruits their area so much.
Yes, for sure.
They're not really a national recruiter. He really just tries to get those Texas kids. So to get in two markets you want to be in. But yeah, I think a lot gets made of it and it's cool, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I think there's a lot of. We pay a lot of attention to stuff that doesn't matter, but this should be a fun week. We have the obviously there's all sorts of tournaments going on, but let's do the Big Six. Let's make a prediction.
All right, race for the case basketball version.
Race for the case basketball version. Whoever gets the most correct, the other one has to buy beer. Especially if I go to New Orleans for the Final Four.
Oh boy, look out! I didn't know you were a possibility for that.
I mean, if it wasn't in New Orleans, maybe not.
Ain't rushing to go to Houston, are you? Glendale.
I mean, I'm just saying. I'm dedication to the company and content. Content, Pat. Content.
There you go.
I don't know. I got to do the Masters, too, so it's right after. So tough spring for me. Tough spring. Anyway, let's pick them.
All right.
Who you got? Let's start. We'll go alphabetical.
Yep.
Okay. This always gets tough when you get into the bigs because of alphabetical. Let's start. ACC. Who you got, Pat? Who's going to win?
I've got Duke. I think they're by far the best team. They just got the refocusing they needed. If there was any chance they were going to go into Brooklyn, I believe they're playing in Barclays, overconfident. Not now. Duke will be ready, and Duke will win.
I would agree. I will take Duke also. Keep an eye out for Miami. They're sneaky.
They are sneaky.
They're sneaky. Yep. And could spring an upset. They're like a fearless, sneaky team.
Yep.
Sneaky and streaky. But Duke just got... I do not want to be the next team to play Duke.
No.
Whoever they're getting in the first round, I don't even know. Let's go to... let's see. I think we would go Big East would be the next. Right? Big East.
Yep.
Okay. Big East. Who you got?
Okay. Ah, boy. I picked Villanova in the 40 minutes, but I'm going to pick Connecticut. I'm going to switch it up there and go UConn. I think Danny Hurley's good coach this time of year. They are tough, tough bunch. And I think they're going to be primed to show up and show something there. Villanova might be looking ahead a little bit to the next tournament. And so I'm taking UConn in the Big East.
All right, I will take Villanova. No one is taking one seed Providence.
Nope.
I will take Villanova. Providence, yeah. Providence earned their thing, but, man, they won so many close games.
Yeah.
Congrats on that. But, yeah, I'll take Villanova. Villanova. All right, Big Ten is next, right? Yep. T-E.
T-E over T-W. Yep.
Big Ten. Other than Nebraska, who you got?
I should take Nebraska just for fun. But this one's going to be wild, I think. There's just too many teams that are close to each other in one, you know, the, in terms of accomplishment and talent and all that sort of thing. I am going to take Purdue, even though their defense sucks and even though they've been a little shaky down the stretch. But I am taking Purdue because they've got the best offense. You're going to have to score to win three games there. And I am rolling with the Boilermakers.
I love this Big Ten because the top three or four, let's throw Iowa in there. All could win it. Wouldn't be surprised, right?
Yep.
The next four, Ohio State, Michigan, Michigan State, and even Rutgers can beat any of the top four.
Yep.
But they also all can lose to the next four.
Right.
So it's just like.
Oh, yeah. No. I mean,
like, if you tell me Michigan State or even Michigan, if they get a jump coming back with Juwan Howard back, like wins it or is in the final on that Sunday, I wouldn't be stunned. But they also could each lose by like 22 points in the, and, you know, like,
yeah.
And like Rutgers, who the hell knows what Rutgers is? Like, you know, so it's just going to be a fun one. But I'm going to go with I'm going to go with Wisconsin. They're going to get Johnny Davis back.
Okay.
And so even with the loss of the loss to Nebraska, I will take,
the quarterfinals there are going to be bonkers for the exact reason you said. I mean, it could be any of the top eight that end up being in the final of that thing, I think.
Yep. Big 12, TW.
All
right.
I am taking Kansas, even though I will say right now that Baylor will go farther in the big tournament, because I think Scott Drew's almost got a little Roy Williams in him where I do not think he gives a rip about the Big 12 tournament. Teams don't generally do very well there. Kansas generally does very well. They always have a massive home crowd because it's in Kansas City, and they tend to crank it up and play well. And then, you know, they're good enough. They usually win the regular season anyway. So they're usually the best team, and they're often by far the best team at that tournament. But I will take the Jayhawks this week, but not thereafter.
I will take Jayhawks also. They're getting that kind of home court advantage. But Scott Drew cares about everything, Pat. He's a very earnest man.
He is that.
Do not think Scott Drew doesn't care about something.
Good point. He probably wouldn't like that.
Cares too much, if anything. Cares too much. So that leaves us with the SEC.
Pac-12 and SEC.
Pac-12, I'm sorry. PAC.
P before S. Here at the alphabet version of the podcast.
I scored a 23 on my alphabet. Did not get Ivy League. Didn't take me. You're there. What do you got? Who you got?
Arizona? I am here. UCLA? And I think Arizona is awesome, but I think we're going to see UCLA hit the gear that we saw them in the postseason last year. So I'm going to say that UCLA ratchets it back up. They've been a little kind of up and down. They've been injured, so we'll see what their health level is. But if they get everybody healthy, whether it's this one or the next one, I say look out for the Bruins. Look out for both of them. They can both go to the Final Four, but I'm going to take UCLA in Vegas.
Yeah, I'm taking Arizona. That's the best team out there. I'm not hoping that UCLA gets it together. I am straight up taking Arizona to win this thing. They look awesome. We'll see. We'll see what we see this weekend. But they are on my short list, as everyone's short list, to win it all. Terrific team. All right. Sully, getting to the SEC. Pat, who you got? I know who Sully's picking.
Yeah, we know who Sully's picking. This one, again, this should be a very, very fun tournament. Four really good teams, I think, in it, in Kentucky, Arkansas, Tennessee, Auburn, and I think I'd put them in that order in terms of what I expect out of them in the postseason. Auburn, incredible talent, athleticism, not playing that well down the stretch at anywhere but Auburn Arena. And so I suspect that show will not travel quite as well as it's been previously. Kentucky, I'm going with Kentucky. Here's the one thing I've seen, Dan, watching a lot of SEC basketball this year, is every team in that league basically will absolutely lose their mind at some point in a game, in a close game, and just do incredibly weird, dumb things, except Kentucky. Kentucky doesn't do that very much. I'm not saying they're completely immune, but they're less prone to it. They can finish games. They don't just completely inexplicably melt down. They don't totally lose focus. And they have the best player in the country, I think, in Oscar Tshiebwe. So I'm taking the Cats.
I'm with you.
Really?
Oh, Sully. He says this is a reverse jinx.
Yeah. He's reverse jinxing.
He's reverse.
Tennessee hasn't won the SEC title since 1979. And that's
reverse jinx. Reverse jinx.
True.
Seriously, it's no reverse jinx. It is they're snake bit in the SEC tournament. I would see Tennessee win a national championship before they win an SEC tournament title.
Wow.
Okay. Well, keep your vision deep in the horizon.
It is pretty crazy that they
Kennedy Chandler, Santiago Viscovi, Josiah Zakai Jordan Ziegler. James.
Yeah. I mean, they got three point guards at any time on the floor.
Yeah.
So they can win it. I'm never picking Tennessee in the SEC title.
They got depth.
Oh, they're good. But as you saw it, like I said, against Arkansas, they're very streaky. Mm-hmm. And we saw the good Tennessee team in the first half, and then you see what can happen, and that'll bite you come March.
Well, unlike Sully, I like this team, but I'm picking the CATS Cats.
Mm-hmm.
Big Blue. Sorry.
Yep.
Kind of uninspired shirt. All reasons.
I think Arkansas has a shot too. I really like Arkansas.
That's going to be great semi quarters and semi. Semis.
Yeah.
Terrific in that.
Well, that tournament was so Kentucky dominated forever until Arkansas joined the league. And then in the 90s, it was awesome because there was a battle for tickets and it was loud as hell when they would play each other. And it was Nolan against Rick. And then Nolan left and Arkansas faded. And now they're back. And I think it's going to be that really helps when you have a fan base specifically that will stand up to Kentucky and create some real atmosphere.
How about Patino saying he was not a candidate at Maryland?
That's funny. Yeah. Just in case anybody was wondering, no, I'm not.
Just trolling people at this point. Okay. Thank you. All right.
He's also not a candidate for president for the Democratic or Republican nomination.
Well, we'll see. So, I mean, you don't have to declare yet. All right. Here's a little bit of college football news. Kirk Herbstreit, sort of the face of college football, if you will. I don't know, at least broadcasting. Omnipresent on the various ESPN platforms, is still going to do college football, but he is also taking a job as the Thursday night football NFL analyst for Amazon. Amazon will be broadcasting the Thursday night games. That's going to bring a pile of money to NBC or to the NFL. I'm sorry. NFL. I'm really not sure how that'll work though. I think the rating it's hard to get people to tune in for stuff. But anyway, Herbie's double dipping because I'm sure he's just trying to knock out the mortgage down there, in Nashville and scrap by. So I'm happy he found a second job.
yeah.
They have not announced a play-by-play guy. I wonder whether it'll be Chris Fowler. I mean, do you bring Chris Fowler in along with him? Is this going to mean we're going to get a little less Herbstreit in college football? Some fans would enjoy that. Others won't. I think he goes out of his way to be fair and informed. Obviously, you're never going to please everyone, or like my career, please no one. Certainly does better than me. Or is he just going to have to cut back on all the commercials he's in? What's going to happen here, Pat?
Great question. I think I would love to know what level of agreement ESPN is in with this. And I mean, Herbie, he was already keeping just a breakneck schedule. Doing the game day set and then doing a game in prime time, whether it was there or not, and flying across the country. And
I mean, it's a private jet.
I know, but it's a hard, long day now. I mean, hey, I've done enough TV. It's a hard, long pain in the ass day to be. First of all, they want you there like 2 days beforehand, doing all the interviews and everything, they grind very hard over all the segments.
They work very hard on that show. I've seen them prepare, yes.
Yeah, and you got to be on the set early. You go through that, and then boom, you're on a jet, and you're going somewhere else, and then you got to call a game. It's going to end at midnight, so you've started your day at 6 a.m. You're finishing at midnight in a different city.
And then you get on a plane?
Yeah, I hope so.
But I don't know. I mean, it's not – there's a lot of – I don't think sports media, we work that hard.
No, but I think
turnaround is he's got all the limousines and cars. I mean, let's not.
I'm just saying it's a grind. 15 weeks a year, calling out the games and doing the morning show. And now if you're going to add the NFL on top too, I wonder if something needs to go. So we'll see how that all goes down. And I'm sure he's making an absolute pile of cash, and good for him for that.
Yeah. I mean, the amount of money is just, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know whether we've discussed this before or not, but I kind of think we had, it's the NFL. I don't think people tune in for the broadcasters. They may either like them or get annoyed by them, but I don't think anybody says, I'm not watching that game because I don't like Kirk Herbstreit, or I am watching that game because I like Kirk Herbstreit. It's the NFL. You're going to watch. I would say, I mean, you could have a trained chimpanzee doing it. But
the Manning House is probably the closest thing we got right now to somebody tuning in. Like, there's a lot of Monday Night Football.
And they got a million and a half. Right. That's all they got. I actually was on Charles Robinson's NFL podcast, You Pod to Win the Game, and we discussed this, and I just think this is insane. They're paying Troy Aikman like $17.5 million to broadcast one game a week.
Wow.
When have you ever sat there and said, oh, big NFL Sunday, awesome, I got time to watch the games. Hey, what game's Aikman calling? That's what I'm going to, you go, oh, crap, Mahomes is playing. Good. I'll tune into that. Like, I think if you just have basic competent people.
Right.
Right. Like that's good enough. You don't want a bad broadcast.
No.
Okay. You don't want a bad broadcast, but you don't want it. Like the idea that anyone's tuning in to hear Herbstreit or Aikman or even Romo after a little bit or any of them. You don't see the Super Bowl ratings change demonstrably or games. It just doesn't happen. So I always think this is a complete waste of money. It's all ego. And then the halftime shows are even worse. Like, I think if you have a good, solid, like a Sean McDonough,
right,
like just really good at broadcasting a game.
Absolutely.
It's all yes. You really need. You don't need to have $17 million.
Sean McDonough or people like that, or Chris Fowler, who I love, Mike Tirico, right. get you all the facts and figures and stuff as it's happening and add a little bit of gravitas to certain plays or situations and that sort of thing. And then otherwise, yeah, it's, then okay, the analyst chimes in every once in a while with something. What do you need? Yeah, they I mute a lot of games these days. A lot of games.
It's I don't know. I don't know why they pay these guys so much, particularly for the NFL, but they do. Good for them. But man, I mean, for that kind of $17 million for Troy Aikman,
it's incredible. I'd love to see. I wonder if there's market research that in any way backs up doing that.
I don't know. Like you said, like the Mannings went with their whole thing. They still only were getting like 1.5 million people watching.
Right.
I was one of them, but and I don't know.
I enjoyed it. And that was something fresh and new and totally different. Most analysts aren't going to be fresh, new and different.
Yeah. Neither here nor there. I got this story here. No good deed goes unpunished. An Indiana boy. A teenager scaled a tree at an Indianapolis park to rescue a cat he spotted up high in the branches that was stuck. Okay. The classic cat stuck in a tree story.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm not. Okay. So he climbs up there to get the cat and he gets stuck himself.
Uh-oh.
The teen identified in the release only as Owen told firefighters he was trying to do a good deed and bring the cat to safety. While Owen had no trouble climbing the tree, his positioning did not allow the same ease for getting down, said the firefighting spokeswoman. Do you believe the story? Do you think he took a cat up there to try to get some pub? Why is a cat climbing way up in a tree? I don't.
Cats because do it's that. A cat. Shit.
It happens all the time.
Yeah, does cats, it really?
Yeah.
Does it?
Yeah, yes. Cats do that.
Cats get caught in trees all the time.
They're interested in squirrels and birds and stuff, and you got to go where they are if you want to try to catch one and eat it. Dan Wetzel, even by your standards, that's a rather cynical take. You think the kid invented it, took the cat?
He drugged the cat up there with him?
I have questions, Owen. Who are you?
What's the motive? What did he want to see a nice bright red fire truck come and save him?
35 feet out. I mean, he's not using his name, so it's not like for really for pub. Like, I don't know. Maybe he's like trying to get like girls at school to talk to him. Like, hey, man, I saved that cat. 35 feet.
Peeping Tom, peeping Owen. Are you trying to spy on somebody's window or something?
I don't know. Well, that's now you're just throwing.
Well, now that you've dragged us all into this world of suspicion, poor Owen is trying to do a good deed out there.
Trying to turn him into Bluto.
Now, I want to update a story that we did last fall, I believe. There was a lawsuit at the U.S. Court out of Chicago by an aggrieved woman who was upset that there was not enough strawberries in the Pop-Tart, Pop-Tart.
Yep.
Stacy Chiapetta said Kellogg's defrauded shoppers with a deceptive packaging for its unfrosted strawberry Pop-Tarts, which contain red food dye that she said makes the filling brighter and more appealing. But there's a big picture of a strawberry, said it was misleading because it contains less than 2% of the Pop-Tart is a dried strawberry in addition to dried apples and pears. So Ms. Chiapetta was quite upset about this and filed a lawsuit. We discussed this, of course. I think we did a people's court on this.
I think we did.
Which side did you come down on, Pat?
Oh, gosh. I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember. Anyway.
Yeah. I'm sure I was outraged one way or the other.
Shockingly, I've not tracked our people's court decisions.
Oh, yeah. We need to get an Excel page going on that.
Well, Marvin Aspen, who is an actual United States district judge, has made his ruling.
Has he?
Yes. No reasonable consumer could believe that Kellogg's packaging that the breakfast staple contained only strawberries or more strawberries than other ingredients such as pears and apples. Quote, the word strawberry combined with the picture of half of a strawberry and a Pop-Tart oozing red filling does not guarantee that there will be a certain amount of strawberries in the product's filling. Aspen wrote.
Ruling in favor of Big Tart.
Big Tart
wins. It is. Big Tart wins.
Yes. This is the funniest thing ever.
Miss Chiapetta takes an L.
Oh, my God. Kellogg, I mean, I'm looking at the lawsuit. Oh, my goodness. Hysterical. Kellogg Sales Company, a.k.a. defendant, manufactures, distributes, markets, labels, and sells toaster pastries purporting to contain filling only from only strawberries, quote, unfrosted strawberry Pop-Tarts or product. Oh, my God.
If you are the lawyer and she comes to you with this, are you just seeing like billable hours, dollar signs in your head thinking, I can't believe somebody's this stupid? Well, yeah, but you at least got the case.
Yeah. Yeah. You lost money. I mean, you're trying to get one third of the settlement and you're hoping to like win. I don't know.
I would tell Miss Chiapetta it's going to take me 100 hours to put this together at whatever my hourly rate is.
Well, Kellogg's won.
Yeah.
This is Chiapetta's lawyer, Spencer Sheehan.
That's, yeah.
Said
that's
in an guy. Email to, I don't know, whatever this is, the Daily Mail. I expect that many of these types of cases may be dismissed. That does not mean the labeling is not misleading. Oh, holding on. Sheehan has filed three other lawsuits, or he, I don't know, Spencer, I guess it's a he. Against Kellogg's over the frosted strawberry, the whole grain frosted strawberry, and the frosted chocolate fudge Pop-Tart.
What's the problem there? Not I don't chocolate?
Doesn't contain fudge, probably. The law firm Perkins Coie defends companies against that. This is an actual business. 325 proposed class action suits were filed in 2021 against the food and beverage industry.
Really?
Up from 221 a year before. It's the fourth straight year of an annual increase.
I would read an oral history on that because I feel like the first one that really started it was the person that sued McDonald's because their coffee was hot.
Now
we have 300 of them a year.
See, I suspect we went from 221 to 325 because it was the pandemic and people were so bored out of their minds. They did things like read the ingredients on their food and said, hey, wait a minute. There's not enough strawberries in my Pop-Tart.
Yeah, I think people got too much time on their hand. The Pop-Tart was first introduced in 1964. This is interesting. Months after Kellogg's competitor Post cereal introduced its own rival toaster paste. It couldn't be a rival, its own. Its own toaster pastry known as Country Squares.
Hmm. Huh. A little history there.
Yeah, but the Pop-Tart just decimated the Country Square market.
Pop-Tart dominated that.
Just I will say, you know what? Country Square.
Things that were introduced in 1964 are great things. I was introduced in 1964. Myself and the Pop-Tarts. We've gone on to have a great run.
Pop-Tart had a very popular animated commercial featuring an animated toaster named Milton. That's what won them the Pop-Tart war.
Really?
Milton.
Is this all, is this Daily Mail background here?
We got DailyMail.com never fails. The American media does crap on this. The Daily Mail is there. This country, I mean, we got Ukrainians like throwing rocks at tanks to fight for their freedom, and we're suing over freaking Pop-Tarts. That's an apple and a pear dyed red. I am outraged. These guys just sent a Tomahawk missile into my apartment building. I am outraged. So-and-so didn't shake my hand in the pregame.
Are you saying we're a little soft in this country, Dan?
As someone who once fought a battle over desks in hotel rooms, yes! And I'm part of the problem. Okay. All right. Finally, mercifully, A for effort on these guys. Border agents. Let's just put it this way. A smuggler, this is the New York Post, another favorite. A smuggler attempted to cross the Mexican-U.S. border with a giant stash of methamphetamines disguised as onions, leaving federal officials impressed with the creativity of the alleged subterfuge.
Has anybody seen Bill Raftery anytime soon?
When you hear Raft this weekend, talk about onions.
Yeah. Onions!
They took the meth, wrapped it up real tight so it looked like an onion, like a white onion. Looking at these pictures. Okay. Then put them in huge onion bags so it looks like pallets of onion.
Really?
Holy $3 million worth of meth.
Oh.
I wouldn't think it would be worth more.
Whoa.
1,197 packages of meth packed amongst real. Gosh. Oh, there were also real onions in there.
Well, okay.
It weighed 1,336 pounds of meth, is worth $2.9 million. Wow. Boy, they're getting a good deal on that. My prices are way higher. Inflation is out of control on the meth market. Said the border agent people, this is not only a clever attempt to try to smuggle in narcotics, one I haven't seen before, but also time-consuming to wrap narcotics into these small packages designed to look like onions. Oh, there's $3 million.
Yeah, right. For $3 million, I would take my time, too.
The canine dogs at the Border Patrol were not confused.
See, that would be where I think the onions might throw them off if you put them, you know, the onion odor. But got to try harder to beat the dogs.
The dogs got them. 46-year-old driver has been arrested in hand. Yeah, he's facing 40. leniency, judge. $3 million? No. Yeah. Incredible.
It did take some onions to try that.
There you go. All right. Send it in, Jerome. Raf. Story for Raf. It's March. This is March. That's what you have to say. That's a very important people in college basketball.
That's right.
This is March.
That's right.
Important. All right. Enjoy the games as it goes on. We'll be back Thursday for more, and we'll figure out how we're covering the NCAA basketball tournament too. It takes long-term planning. We haven't done that yet.
I'll be podcasting from my bed yet again Thursday.
Yeah, again, too much information. Too much information. Stay away from that blanket and that suede thing. Vegas is a horrible place.
It's a new hotel. I mean, that people would have to try hard to
find out. Yeah. They try hard. That's the thing. It's Vegas. They try hard.
Great point.
Talk to y'all later.